local.
Live and local.
This is Sacktown Sports.
From... Nate's really jamming back there. From the 916, our guy that we met at our event, and we will have more.
Yes.
Trust me.
For sure.
You know, Dave isn't the only one. Dave's talking about all of his events. Well, we got some too.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And Dave, you better be there again from Hey, Hey, Johnny K. Now, I'm not saying I don't like Malik Monk. I love watching him and I love his game. And I think he's the perfect six man for any team, but not a starter. But in all caps, Malik gets in his head too much, as we've seen with free throws at the end of games. Also, he can be a little spastic with the passes sometimes. He also couldn't get his game back on track before the end of the season, before he got injured, after he got upset and stormed off the court. These are just a few of the things that other teams will be looking at when thinking about Malik Monk. So, hey, hey, Johnny K, are you trying to convince other teams to not take him?
Right.
Or are you saying that the Kings would be okay without him? I won't really... It's not that I'm agreeing or disagreeing with Hey, Hey, Johnny K. What all I'll say is that this team is built a certain way, and I don't know. This team is going, whether, even if Malik comes back, changes need to be made in how this team was constructed.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say. There was way too much on Malik, way too much on Sabonis, way too much on De'Aaron. And, you know, big three, there are levels to big threes. And for the level that they are at right now, you need more help off the bench. And look at Jokic. I mean, that's the thing. We're talking like it's not a negative on the Kings. All of these guys have they have a that's a bad bench.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad bench.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. It was. It did not perform. I mean, especially in those last couple games. Like, you look at the bench scoring, and it was under 15. Like, Davion did great in that last game against the Pelicans. But, you know, him and Trey really struggled in that Golden State game. And, you know, you didn't have the consistency of, is Duarte coming off the bench? Is Kessler Edwards coming off the bench? Like, we didn't know once Malik went out. It was a really bad bench. To the point that Mike Brown pretty much played seven players in the gotta have it elimination game. I think, well, eight, because Sasha eventually got the call as well. He just didn't trust them. He just never, all year he was searching. People got upset because they were like, Mike Brown can't find consistent rotation. No, Mike Brown couldn't consistently find somebody who was giving good effort and was doing what needed to be done every game. It was a bad bench. I'm right there with you. They were not deep enough. We thought they could have been deep enough, but again, we've talked about it. None of the offseason transactions really ended up panning out, and that was pretty much how the Kings' depth was going to be structured.
Yeah, I look, some of those early shows that we did when I was, you know, we were getting started here, and we talked about the how deep the bench is. I also think that every fan base thinks that they have a deep bench.
Yes, they do.
Until the season starts,
exactly.
And then they don't have.
Oh,
Jennifer, we were just about to get to you, and you hung up. All right, Ken, what you got for us?
Hey, what are you doing, gentlemen? How you doing this afternoon?
Good, man.
I just want to say something real quick, just because I thought, hey, man, I guarantee y'all not going to say the Monk's face, man. Listen, man, you are not doing all these things, man, to that man who is so passionate about being here, passionate about the game. You know, you put fuel to the fire. I wasn't going to even speak on this, but just your last comment, you put fuel to the fire. That is unnecessary.
I think you're hearing us reading texts. We didn't. What did we say about Malik Monk? This has happened before. I don't think we said this. I think you're listening to us reading off text messages from other people.
Oh, okay. I thought you gentlemen was speaking as like Monk has not done this and he's not done that.
No. We were reading a text. Yeah, we were reading a text.
Okay.
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay, you know that. I want to speak on Monk. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into this situation. Sacramento, man, watch. We have an all-star, you know, that's playing on a team, DiVincenzo. Mm-hmm. That we got rid of that guy 2 years ago. I already knew, man, he was a good player.
Yep.
The way the way the commentators talked about that guy last night, I'm like, I knew we had a good player, and we got rid of him. I don't know how we got rid of him, or I don't know the reason why. But I don't want Sacramento to make that same mistake with Monk. We cannot. And then you just talked about it, about our bench. if you get rid of Monk, that's the mold of the bench. You know what I'm saying? If you don't start him, and starting and coming off the bench is overrated. You know, you can start a game, be in there 2 minutes. Bench can come in and play more minutes, you know, just because you start. That's overrated. So we ain't gonna even talk about starting and be on the bench. But mm-hmm. you have to have a strong bench. And like you mentioned, our bench is weak. And we can't get rid of Monk like that, you know.
Yeah.
Monk is a passionate cat, TC. I know you talked about Team TC out there, but, you know, building the team is building from stars, you know, that yeah. already play into the system. And you already see Monk plays into the system, and Mike Brown, he mm-hmm. trusts it. He trusts his teammates. But we have to get rid of the Lighty Brighties. Our Lighty Brighties have not performed well this year, you know. So I'm just saying, once we get a stronger bench mm-hmm. – and once we get creative with our selection of players, we'll be a great team. But don't get rid of Monk.
Yeah.
DiVincenzo is going off in the playoffs.
Game winner.
On the New York Knicks. Come on, man.
Game winner.
We hang him.
I know.
So how you guys feel, man? I normally drop the mic, but you know, I want to get your feelings on the station because I'm at my office.
No, you're good. You're good, Ken. Make that money. Thanks for the call, Ken.
Yes,
I'm surprised it took that long for the DiVincenzo. That went way over my head. The DiVincenzo game winner, by the way.
It made me sad.
And you know who else is doing that? Oh, the Kings are doing that. Warrior fans are saying this. Steve Kerr had him playing power four and setting screens. So both NorCal teams are upset about DiVincenzo. Yeah. But no, neither team was going to allow that man to take 30 threes a game.
Exactly. I think that's the biggest difference with the Dante thing specifically is Dante's in a situation now where he's in his dreamland. Like they're just telling him, Dante, we ain't got nobody else who can shoot like you. Let it fly. And he's definitely doing that. But and absolutely shout out him. But I think the point still stands that you just don't want to see your old players in playoff situations, right? Especially when you're knocked out. Mm-hmm. The last thing you want to see is Malik Monk dropping a 20-piece to help the Orlando Magic advance to the second round or something.
Just because semantics matter and wording matters, Ken did say you can't get rid of Malik Monk. They want Malik Monk. Yeah. It's just a matter of whether Malik Monk wants it deemed $17 million a year enough compared to what – we don't know what other offers he's going to get. But they definitely are not going to get rid of Malik Monk. The ball is in Malik Monk's court. You know, Will, Will, go ahead. Nate already briefed us. I guess you're coming after us. What do you have for us, Will?
I'm going to rip y'all. Look, Styles. You cool. You know, Watkins has always been a Bron hater. I ain't going to talk to him.
Oh, Will, no. Hey, brother, hold on. I have many things. Hater, I am not a LeBron James hater at all.
When were we talking about LeBron?
Hold on, Will. Go ahead, Will.
I hear you all the time, man. Look here. We're going to be diplomatic right here.
Yes,
look.
Yeah.
Who beat New Orleans and made it to the playoffs? The Lakers or the Kings?
The Lakers did, yes, sir.
Case closed. Don't even talk about that. Look, you know this, Styles. You know, let's be honest. The Lakers wasn't complaining about fouls in the whole game. The Lakers, look, Jokic, everybody know Jokic travels all the time. He changes pivot feet. He pick up his pivot. He slops all the time. You know this. That Jokic get away with more stuff than that. He's 8 feet tall, and anybody bump into him, he falls like the Grand Canyon. You know, that's what they're saying. In crucial times, the Lakers did get some hacks, and they didn't get the call. But let me move on. Look, it's not about Keegan. Everybody talking about what Keegan has to do. It's the Kings. Keegan is a catch and shoot guy. I don't think he's gonna ever be able, like what Watkins was saying, he's not gonna be able to put the ball on the floor and create a shot. That's not him. You can see he's a catch and shoot guy. Okay, let me move on. Mm-hmm. You guys making a joke about Jokic's brother punching Jokic's brother, you know, punch some guy in the face. Look, don't laugh about that. It could have been your father. It could have been your brother. It could have been your cousin. And I'm telling you right now, they think they bad. They think they the Klitschko brothers. But let me tell you something. They hit the wrong Laker fan in the face. they better get some bodyguards. I'm telling you right now. Them guys, I've seen them try to bully people before at games. Somebody needs to tell them, ain't nobody going to fight them big old dudes. Ain't nobody going to fight them, but they better be careful.
Thanks for the call, Will. That might be the call of the year.
Who does Will hate more, Chris or Jokic?
That was dude, outstanding. We were not making fun of it. He got knocked out, Will. He got knocked out, Will. We're not making fun of him. We also don't know why he got knocked out. Maybe he said something. We don't know. We weren't laughing. First, I thought Will was watching the show on tape delay because he was talking about the Lakers, but he wanted to encompass everything.
I still am trying to figure out why I'm a LeBron hater.
Yeah,
and then he immediately agreed with me and said I was right about Keegan. And so I'm confused, but I appreciate you, Will.
That was something else. Nate'll brief us on what the calls are going to be about, but. No one could brief you enough for the wrath.
No, Ken caught me off guard too because he called in and wanted to talk about Malik or whatever, and then answers the phone and immediately goes in on you guys. And I'm like,
I
should have
heard something while he was on hold.
Yeah, I know. You deduced it.
That is great stuff. Yes. You know what? This is the off season.
It's great.
This is the time.
It's so good.
This is the time. This is outstanding stuff. Thanks, everyone. And call lines are still open. Who is going to beat Will for the call of the
good
year?
Luck.
I can't wait. Maybe it'll be today. Maybe it'll be Will himself setting his own records. 916-339-1140. When we return, Howard Beck, an outstanding piece in the Ringer. Kings, like Maren Morris, stuck in the middle. How did they get out of it? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sports. Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
No one's trying to beat Will, huh? 916-339-1140. All guests and callers join us from the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Howard Beck wrote another outstanding article, Chris, on The Ringer about being stuck in the middle. And some of the excerpts here, and this one stuck out to me. The truth is, making the leap from bad to good in the NBA is, relatively speaking, the easy part. Even if the Kings stubbornly defied this adage for more than a decade, hit one lottery pick like Fox and you gain hope. Hit a second lottery pick like Tyrese Halliburton, whom the Kings later traded for Sabonis, and you're on your way to respectability and win totals in the mid to high 40s. But making the leap from good to great, that's a much, much tougher task. And really, throughout it, he talks about things that we've done on this show, comparing the Kings to the Nuggets, right? And that blueprint and things like that. The Nuggets have also drafted well after the moves that they made.
Yep.
And I think that can't be discussed enough. And teams that do sustain, they are able to do that. In part, to be completely honest with you, and this happens because it is literally called a lottery and it's random. The Warriors are ending their run because they didn't draft properly. If they hit, and I know James Wiseman, everybody would have picked him, but you take James Wiseman, you take Kuminga, who I defend against Chris Watkins here all the time, but you have James Wiseman, Kuminga, and Moody, and we can pick other guys in that draft that the Warriors missed on, and that ultimately ended it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, and they got a cheat code because they got Klay Thompson hurt. And while he was hurt, they got top picks. Yep. That's essentially where the Grizzlies are at. The Grizzlies didn't win any championships, but they've been in contention. So you can't mess stuff like that up.
Mm-mm.
The Nuggets, they've made moves. They've made tough changes. Every time I see Gary Harris on the Magic, I think, can you just send him a ring? I feel like he needs one.
Yeah.
And after that,
it's a sacrificial lamb.
There you go. And then after that, you go on to draft well, the Christian Browns of the world and guys like that. So you have to hit. And we're starting, Chris. I know that it's there's still a feeling that the Kings, what are they going to do with that pick? Maybe they draft after, or maybe they trade after they draft a guy. But they need to focus now on getting number 13 right.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Even in a down draft year.
That's a double entendre, too, because they need to get 13 right as in the pick. They need to get Keegan Murray right, too, number 13
exactly.
right as well, in order for this thing to truly take that other level. I mean, yeah, if the point of the article is how do the Kings get out of the middle – it's an easy answer. It's Keegan Murray jumping to another level of stardom here, or entering all-star conversations. And absolutely, yeah, if you knock out this number 13 pick, whether it be making the pick itself, and like you're saying, you know, I think Jaime Jaquez was picked around number 13 in that late lottery. You see how he's impacting things in Miami. If you can get a guy like that at 13, that's an unexpected leap from this team. That's something that, frankly, I think this team really, really missed this year. We know how they brought in Chris Duarte. They brought in Sasha. They bring in JaVale McGee as well. That's all fine and great, but it felt like the Kings were missing that young addition. And Colby Jones, of course, was the Kings' draft pick. He was a second-round pick. You don't expect a NBA-ready now guy in the second round. Colby was probably about as ready-made as you get for a second-round pick, and even then he couldn't contribute all too much. So the Kings have to get a major contributor, and when I say major, I mean just a guy who's going to end up being in the rotation more times than not. They've got to get something out of that pick, whether it be getting that from the number 13 pick, or like you said, making that pick and then trading it off for somebody who is actually a veteran who's ready to go right now. But in the couple of mock drafts I've seen, there's been some good names at 13. You got Jared McCain, who's a local, or has some local ties, is from Sacramento, went to Duke, had a fantastic freshman season. I've also seen Ron Holland, who's a G leaguer, who me and Brendan actually got to see earlier this year, who's just an athletic freak. Like, he's a 6'6", 6'7", guy who's got crazy long wingspan, is an NBA defender right now, and kind of has those stereotypical, you know, he's a good finisher, good athlete, can't really shoot, and how well he can shoot will end up determining his NBA prospects. But there's some good pieces at 13.
You know what I got here? This is from 1999 to now.
Oh, gosh.
I'm going to name off some of the 13th picks.
Oh, beautiful.
In the draft.
Let's do it.
Grady Dick went in 2023.
Okay. Legend.
Jalen Duren went
in 13.
Well, yeah, he went in 2022. Your boy, everyone's boy, Chris Duarte was number 13 in 2021. Some of the other names, Tyler Hero went 13 in 2019. Chris's favorite player of all time, Donovan Mitchell, went 13 in 2017. And here you go. Devin Booker was number 13 in 2015.
That's a lot of good 13s.
Zach LaVine went number 13 in 2014. Kelly Olynyk went.
These are rotational players.
In 2013. Markieff Morris in 2011.
That's
it gets
fine.
A little
that's
thin.
That's
Richard
fine.
Jefferson,
that's
he played for years in 2001. And one guy, you remember this guy, this might be before your time, Sebastian Telfair.
Oh, absolutely.
Went 13 in 2004.
Yeah, absolutely.
Through the fire.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes me feel even better about the number 13 pick. Those are all, I mean, there's some high-level players. I mean, even in my
Corey Maggette played for a long time. That was 1999.
All those dudes, Zach LaVine, Devin Booker. Like, and what that tells me, too, is number 13, in a way, I've obviously been keeping a lot of tabs on this NFL draft, and in a weird way, like the number 3 pick in this year's NFL draft is the perfect one, because you just end up taking who is still there. Like, you don't have to make the tough decision of, do I take Caleb? Do I take Jalen or Jaden Daniels? Do I take Drake May? Because those decisions will already be made for you. I think that 13 pick is a nice one, because you end up getting, you know, like all the guys who just have high ceiling. You know, once you get to 7, 8, 9, those are teams that are like, we're not good enough to, like, take a ready now guy. We kind of need to take a dude who just has a ton of potential and hope that it works out. So at 13, you end up kind of getting the best of the rest, the guys that have something there, but, you know, also don't really have the big pop that makes them a top 10. You just kind of end up getting a lot of people that are overlooked. And I think a lot of those names are guys that coming out of college had a lot of skill sets to work with, but for whatever reason, they just never reached the top of the draft board. So I think 13 is actually a really, really good spot to land.
And I hate to say this, I really do, as a Zont King, and we are approaching short King summer, but I just don't think you can draft anybody under the height of 6'5".
Oh no! No,
you can't.
They need a forward.
It has. Yeah. I'm thinking you got to be a 6'8"er, 6'9"er. I'll allow 6'6", 6'7", but you need that length. I'm looking around, Chris. Every time you turn on the TV during the NBA playoffs, you name it. You know the Pelicans got a bunch of guys.
Too many.
Give me a Trey Murphy. Okay.
Please.
Give me a Herb Jones. Give me somebody like that. All these teams have guys like that, and the Kings just do not. Just a lengthy guy that's just there to D up, get boards, and make some shots when it's time to make some shots. I was looking, how big is Watson on the Nuggets?
Watson, I'm trying to think, because he's got some length to him. He's probably like 6'4", 6'5".
Yeah, he's 6'7".
6'7".
Peyton Watson is 6'7".
I was like, okay, because, yeah, yes. So, yeah, I mean, a guy like that, he's kind of more of a combo guard, but, you know, definitely you need some guys who have some versatility to him. Yesterday they were asking Kevin Huerter in his exit interview, like, are you ready to play the three next year in case, you know, because of how much the Kings played three-guard lineups? And I heard that, and I pretty much thought exactly what you just said. Like, can we please get some more height in here, please? Because if we're talking about Kevin Huerter playing significant minutes at the three.
No.
I think that's a sign of, not desperation, but probably a big need.
I don't think.
Yeah,
I mean,
that should not be.
Well, and the thing is, he's tall enough. I just don't think he's built for that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, he's not physical enough. I don't know if he's athletic enough to necessarily stay with a lot of those threes. It's probably something you can get away with, but ultimately I don't love Kevin Huerter at the three.
When we return, continuing the conversation, Jordy Fernandez officially named Brooklyn Nets head coach. Chris gives his thoughts on what that means and who can fill that void. Stiles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Well, you hope that Malik Monk returns, but we do know someone that won't be returning, and that's Jordy Fernandez, officially named Brooklyn Nets head coach. Fernandez joined the Kings in 2022 and quickly worked his way up to become an associate head coach. He anchored that defense that had really began to take a step forward towards the end of the season with the addition of Keon Ellis. And Chris, I'll throw it to you, who really saw everything unfold with Jordy and his path and his trajectory, and now just finally making it to the apex of the coaching world if you are a basketball coach, head coach of an NBA team.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, how quickly things happened. I mean, you know, I remember when Jordy was hired. He was the first person, if I'm not mistaken, hired from Mike Brown. And we knew the history that he had kind of, you know, been Mike's, I wouldn't call him personal coach, but like Mike is, Mike Brown trusted Jordy to be his son Elijah's personal personal coach. Mm-hmm. And so you knew that Mike had a certain level of not only relationship, but just trust in a guy like Jordy, and Jordy pretty instantly became his associate head coach. He's replacing Jock Vaughn, who was fired in February from Brooklyn, and you know their season has just been an absolute mess. I remember you asking, I think it was right before the Kings had made that road trip at the end of the year, just like, what is Brooklyn? Like, what is their goals?
Right.
What are they trying to do? I still don't have a good answer to that. I don't think they really know. I mean, they just signed guys like Cam Johnson last year. They still have Dorian Finney-Smith. They still got Mikal Bridges. But at the same time, they're pumping out Cam Thomas, who's they're just okay. dropping 40 and losing games. So Jordy's walking into a pretty weird situation. He already hired an assistant, Steve Hetzel, who has spent his last three seasons in Portland with Chauncey Billups, also spent some time with Steve Clifford in Charlotte and Orlando. So it sounds like he's building out his team already. It's going to be interesting to see, and I think we talked about it last week, but does he bring anybody along with him? Like, I don't think Doug or anything like that is up for grabs, but, you know, Luke Laux is somebody who's been really close with the workings of Mike Brown. I wonder if there's some, you know, I wouldn't say loyalty necessarily, mm-hmm. but just how a guy like Luke Laux views his situation with Jordy obviously gone. It kind of opens up a really premier spot on the bench. And so you got to kind of calculate with what Jordy's probably offering you versus what you have to think your opportunity could be here. But it's awesome. I mean, Jordy is a fantastic guy. Somebody who, when we talked to him at Summer League a couple years ago when he led it, just was with a breath of fresh air. Like, you know, oftentimes these guys have like an aura to them, mm-hmm. where, you know, they're big time. They've been around the NBA for forever, and you know, all that stuff happens behind closed doors. And so there's a sense of, I have a wall up, especially when I'm talking to media. None of that with Jordy. Jordy is the most real person ever. There's a couple clips. I saw one circulating of him coaching Team Canada where, you know, he's like, one time, all right, guys, whatever, it's cool. Two times, I'm going to be upset. I yelled at you guys, told you to fix it. Three times, what the F? Like, he is that kind of, like, real coach. He's not about big speeches. He's not about any of that. He's just about real emotion. You can go look at his post-game after he got that win last year when Mike Brown got kicked out in Toronto. They showered Jordy with water as his first official win as a head coach. And just the emotion that he felt after that. He's a rah-rah guy, for sure. Not saying he doesn't know X's and O's, but he's the kind of guy that's going to get you motivated to go out there and play. And that's something De'Aaron talked a lot about yesterday in his exit interview when talking about Jordy. Just, he's somebody who motivated them, who you know, he was this team's defensive coordinator when they were banging their heads against the wall at that, in those, you know, mid to low 20s. Jordy just kept saying, guys, we got, believe me, trust me, we can be a top 15 defense if we just do these things. And eventually you saw it happen. So he's somebody who is always going to push for you to be great and to be successful. And who knows if it's going to work out in Brooklyn. There's so many outside things that you can't really control that go into coach success and failure. He might not even be given a fair shake, but at the very least, this is a great opportunity for Jordy, and he's still a really young guy. So even if this doesn't work out in Brooklyn, I'd assume they have a good idea of what the time frame they think this thing can get turned around. I would assume Jordy will definitely find himself on another bench if it doesn't work out in Brooklyn. So I'm just excited. I'm really excited to see how it goes. I'm excited to see how much the Kings miss him and just how much importance Mike Brown put on his shoulders. So it's going to be really, really interesting just to kind of see how that situation ends up panning out.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I don't know if a lot of people would say it hits as hard as, say, a football situation, because these guys could be calling plays
exactly.
and things like that, but they're definitely going to feel it. Let's hear from Keegan Murray. And somebody who, you know, kind of came in and Jordy had been there for a little bit, and then Keegan comes in. So let's hear from Keegan Murray and his bond with Jordy.
Yeah, Jordy, I mean, he was my summer league coach my rookie season. So I've kind of had a good bond with him from basically the start of when I got to Sacramento. And he's definitely a coach that I feel like has influenced me a lot, just from him talking to me, coaching me in summer league, and then being able to be with him the last 2 years. He's been a really good coach, and I feel like he'll be a really good head coach. I feel like I've seen him take that role before, and he's been successful at it when we've lost Mike a couple games and things like that. But I mean, our coaching staff, I feel like, is done really well. Obviously they're getting a lot of opportunities now elsewhere and coaching vacancies and things like that, but I feel like we've got a good staff here that's allowed us to be successful these last couple of years.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's really it too. That's where this conversation goes next is who steps up, because that is a really, really big gap. Defensive coordinator, I don't know, like you were saying, like, I don't know, football versus basketball. Obviously, football coordinators have a lot more say in, like, the structure of how everything gets done. And like you mentioned, the calling plays and all that stuff. I don't think the NBA defensive coordinators have that much of an impact, but for sure, they're the ones who are implementing everything. I'm assuming doing all the back-end research on if this is something that's working or what would work best for us. But ultimately, like, you know, he is still one of the assistant coaches is more how you should view him. You shouldn't tie in the Kings' defensive success with how good of a job Jordy does. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Doug Christie is definitely a big option. He's obviously really, really big here in Sacramento, but that wouldn't be the only reason. Doug is somebody who is probably the best defender in the Sacramento. Probably, I shouldn't even, Ron Artest, at his, whatever. Doug is one of the best defenders to ever wear a Kings jersey. And so it would make a lot of sense, especially for him to step into that role. Luke Laux, I already spoke about, but there's a couple people. Lindsey Harding, as somebody who's gotten NBA coaching, head coaching interviews in Charlotte, and Charlotte's situation seems like it's going to take a while, but there's a lot of qualified candidates for the Kings to have replace Jordy Fernandez. And like Keegan said there, I think that's a really good sign that your staff is healthy. Like, the fact that you have a ton of options that you feel good about, and you have multiple people that are being interviewed for other candidacies, to me, that's a really good sign that you have a strong bench. If people, you know, the Kings didn't make the playoffs this year and people are still trying to take a piece of what they have, I think that's a really good sign that this organization's in a good place.
Is it too much of a stretch to bring that back to the idea of Mike Brown and the mutual opt-out and not getting the extension offer yet? Is it too much of a stretch to say, man, Vivek needs to see more from Mike, but clearly he's doing something right because his guys and women are getting poached based on the success that they've had? Is it too much of a stretch to say that?
I wouldn't think so, no. I think that's spot on, right? Like, if I'm doing such a bad job that I don't want to be back, why are people trying to take what we got? Because if what we were doing wasn't right, people wouldn't want a piece of it.
Exactly.
They would say, look at those guys, they're going to crash and
burn. They're a mess.
They think they're on their way, but they're actually doing everything wrong. So that's a great point, and I'm sure it's something Mike Brown will throw right back in those negotiations because, I mean, again, there's no better sign that what you're doing is the right thing than other people looking at your situation and saying, we need that. We need to take a piece of that. And, you know, yeah, it's not just Jordy. It's not just like they have one big name out. It's not the Ben Johnson of the Lions where, you know, Jordy's the guy who gets all the credit for everything. You have Jay Triano, who's a dude who's been there, done that, has coached multiple teams, has coached Canada's national team, has tons of head coaching experience. Doug doesn't have a lot of coaching experience, but has a lot of experience around the NBA. Leandro Barbosa, somebody I didn't even mention, he's on this coaching staff as well. Of course, has tons of NBA knowledge. I think he had the longest career of anybody on that staff. So I think that they're more than capable of replacing that, and it would be interesting to see, how those negotiations with Mike and Vivek go, because, you know, I don't know how active those talks are. I mean, if you read Sam Bamick's article, it's not active at all. But Mike Brown's definitely got a point there if he throws that back.
When we return, season superlatives, opening back up the phone lines, 916-339-1140. Favorite moments of the season, favorite heartbreaks or worst heartbreaks of the season. And at 1 o'clock, we switch to some Niners talk with Nate behind the glass. Nate and Chris have some things to say about what John Lynch had to say about star receiver Brandon Ayuk. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Live and local.
This is Sacktown Sports.
From the 831, Chris, Will has solidified himself as a legend today. Yeah, that was pretty funny stuff. I'll probably listen to that back on the way home.
He just went to like four different places.
Yeah. Shout out to Will. Also from the 831, pick number 13 can potentially allow the team to add a solid piece off of the bench. This draft class isn't sexy from a starter standpoint, but there is definitely talent that can be added to our roster to help bolster the bench a bit.
Yeah, there always is. I mean, even in the hallowed 2013 NBA draft class where everybody says was the worst of all time or worse in a very, very long time, where Anthony Bennett went two and Anthony Bennett went one, Victor Oladipo went two. Even Giannis went, I think, 14 in that draft. So even in drafts where everybody's like, oh, there's nothing here, there's usually something there. You just have to be the one to find it. And that's something, you know, in a weird way, Monty McNair's actually been really good at finding guys later in the draft. Let's not forget Tyrese Halliburton was picked at 12 or something like that, right around 13. So, you know, he's got a pretty good track record. And so far in the draft, he's done pretty well. You know, he had pressure to take Jaden Ivey, stuck to his guns and took Keegan Murray. Davion Mitchell, I think, is a good pick. I don't think it's the absolute best pick you could have made, but I think you look at the other names around him and, you know, all of the best names, I think you would have gotten really excited about. Guys like Franz Wagner and Jonathan Kuminga had already gone in front of him. So Monty's got a pretty good track record on these drafts. I would think he'll do pretty well with 13 if he's got a stick and pick.
Yeah, Giannis was actually 15.
Oh, there you go.
Because I just looked up the best. Because I'm thinking here, oh, man. The history of the Kings, you're going to draft someone and then someone is going to ball out right behind you. But 14 does get a little dicey, Chris. I'm looking here just in the last couple years. Again, it goes to 1999. The names that stick out, Aaron Nesmith, okay, you have him. You have Michael Porter Jr. at 14.
Sure.
Bam Adebayo at 14. You also have Denzel Valentine at 14. Cam Payne at 14. The other Marcus Morris Sr. at 14. So, yeah, I mean, the difference between 13 and 14 seems to be pretty big. I think the thing is, out of those names, I mean, Bam, out of those, the 13 and 14 in the last couple of years, Bam might be the best name.
Yeah.
But there's more value, or there's more talent that you've seen come out of, or production that you've seen come out of the 13th pick. So there you go. Michael Porter Jr. starting forward on a championship team. So yeah, you can focus in on trying to move it somehow, some way on draft night, or you can say, hey, let's go out and let's see if we can find somebody that can, that can help the team. All right. Season superlatives. 916-339-1140. Some of the highlights from this season: Malik Monk against the Utah Jazz to start the season off right. Malik Monk's game winner against the Warriors in the in-season tournament, and Keegan Murray's 47 points. Chime in if we are forgetting anything. Nate, let's get it started off with Malik Monk, the dunk in game one against the Utah Jazz.
As the clock winds down, let JaVale go one-on-one. De'Aaron Fox with the steal.
Swiper, the other way. Dive. Oh, he brought the house down. Look at this Jazz crowd. They don't believe it.
The pairing of...
They did not believe it.
That's great.
He brought the house down. Look at this Jazz crowd. They don't believe it.
No, they didn't,
still,
Kyle.
They still don't believe
it.
They don't believe it.
They don't believe it, Mr. Draper. And that's great for promos because they were able, NBC Sports able to run that all season.
Game one,
That was the promo.
It was bad for us because we were looking for a different promo for this show for a while.
We will still find it. Find the young Keegan at Young Keegan at some point in time. Let's go to Malik Monk's game winner against the Golden State Warriors.
Kings have a chance to take the lead here. Wiggins with five fouls. Monk drives on him. Monk hangs. And he scores! What a basket! Malik Monk gives the Kings the lead. Points off the bench.
And this is great defense by Wiggins. You can't play this any better.
Wow.
Amazing.
That one's great, too, because Draymond just goes down on the other end and just turns it right over.
Oh, yeah. That was great stuff.
It had the weird court from
the in-season.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great shot, but it went in.
There were two bank shots.
I think that means it was a great shot.
There are a lot of bank shots between the Kings and the Warriors this season. A lot of random bank shots.
Would you say Derrick Rose's bank playoff win shot was a good shot?
The worst.
Yeah.
Sabonis, because the Kings almost got away with it in Chase Center, because Sabonis had banked in
that
shot.
Right.
And that's when Clay came back and hit the game winner. A lot of banks, but it doesn't matter. In a rivalry game,
that's right.
By the way.
Yeah.
What are we missing here as far as the best moments? My favorite moment was probably when I was on the big screen when Malik Monk had the dunk against the Suns. It was a crazy dunk, and I got caught in 4K. Wow, it was a ridiculous dunk, and I got to see it from a nice spot. I was living good. I was sitting close to the court that game. That was the only game I got to sit there, but it was outstanding. That was probably my favorite, and my favorite game was that Warriors game, because as we talked about yesterday, I don't recall the Kings coming back from a lot of deficits off the top of my head. That was one I thought the Kings were absolutely cooked in that game, and they came back and won the whole thing.
Yeah, we
and
can throw in smacked, the other Warrior game,
and then got
too.
Smacked to the Pelicans.
Yeah, we can throw in the play-in win. Definitely, I think, can be some people's number one on the list.
I thought that was the play. Oh, the play-in win. That's right.
Play-in win.
That's right. Yes. That's,
I know. It's confusing.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Mm-hmm. It's awful.
I'm going to go with Keegan's 47. I do have a similar story to the one you just told. It was the only game this season that I got to watch as a spectator, and not any media hat was worn by me that day. And so it was just crazy to like be a part of the Murray side of it. You know, I've seen it from afar, the Keegan Murray, but to actually be a part of it on the 47-point game as he was just letting it fly the entire quarter or the entire game. I mean, it was ridiculous to watch. Like, it really did feel like I was in a movie, or I was watching a video game, or I was in a dream that I was going to wake up from, because it was just, I had never seen, you know, watch enough NBA basketball, you see random guys go off. Lonnie Walker has that crazy game in the playoffs last year where he kills the Warriors. It feels like it never happens for the Kings where a guy is just truly unconscious. And the only other time I could think of it was Omri Caspi was unconscious, but it was as he was going back and forth with Steph Curry and Steph bested him and the Warriors destroyed that game. Keegan had 47 in a game where I don't believe De'Aaron Fox played, and Keegan just put the team on his back completely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, De'Aaron did not play that day. Keegan, 12 of 15 from 3, 16 of 23 from the field, 8 rebounds, 47 points. He was a plus 33. I mean, it was incredible to be a part of, and it just felt fake. And in a way, it feels like its own separate entity from the entire season, because we never saw it again. Like, Keegan never really – he played a great play-in game against the Warriors, but ultimately we never saw that aggressive or that locked in of a Keegan ever again. Or that the rest of the
season. Yeah, and I think the difference is Keegan's confidence of shooting, because when he gets hot like that, they're not wide open. Was it against the Jazz?
Yes, it was against the Jazz.
Yeah, so
he
some
was
of them,
open that yeah, night.
But. Yes, because the Jazz aren't – you know, they're building. And – Keegan, and that's what I want to see going into next season, and I've been saying this, and I'm going to keep saying it, his ability to shoot contested jump shots, right? I mean, we know how the flow offense works, and you're going to have opportunities, and it's going to give you open shots. But Keegan said it was eye-opening how much he was not open this season. How do you react, right? There's the punch, and then there's the counter, and then there's the counter to the counter. And that's what Keegan has to work on this offseason, having a counter to the counter. There's no reason if Keegan gets in the corner, he can't give a pump fake and go baseline and have people collapse on him all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
No, absolutely. That should definitely be, I mean, just him putting the ball on the ground should be the objective of next season, is just trying to figure out how we can get this guy to create more. Get him in pick and rolls. Get him attacking the rim. How do you make Keegan Murray a more versatile weapon? How do you Swiss Army knife Keegan Murray offensively?
You have the, and I know you have certain feelings on this, but just the whole situation, the double-double record for Domantas Sabonis, you got to put that up there.
It's not really the him getting the 80,
that's
whatever,
right.
The 70. I can't even tell you what team that was against. I mean, like the entire spectacle of it, sure, but
yes.
Moment specifically, like I can't remember. I mean, there was the moment where they put him back in to get the streak continued.
Oh, right.
That
all
would
right.
be something. That would probably be my most memorable moment.
There you go. Well, there is another one. I'm thinking of other players. De'Aaron Fox, would you say
De'Aaron's putback in that Warrior game was crazy.
Well, yes, that was insane.
Probably his best play.
Yeah, the problem is De'Aaron, he has to go Super Saiyan in games that the Kings ultimately don't end up winning because nobody else is doing anything.
Exactly.
Which is why he ends up going Super Saiyan.
Yeah, and like he didn't have game winners this year that I can think of. You know, again, I always talk about last year, you had so many game winners from him. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, you didn't have a Clipper game again where it's, you know, 150 to 100.
That Magic game was crazy, but that was Malik Monk.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That one at home where, yeah, De'Aaron ended up getting hurt. That was a really great game. I think that ended up going to double overtime, too. Mm-hmm. I would still probably put Keegan as my number one. There just hasn't been as many moments as there were last year. It feels like all of these moments, Keegan's 47 probably would have been in there, but I don't know if any of these other moments would have made it last year.
JaVale, when he hit that three?
No.
All right.
That was not my favorite.
When we return, a little bit of Niner talk. John Lynch had some things to say about Brandon Ayuk yesterday. What does Nate have to say about that? And Chris and myself and you, 916-339-1140, about their star receiver. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.